Hello and welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the podcast where each week I explore what it means to be a kick-ass and kind adult in our modern world. Expect strong language and viewpoints, as no topic is out of bounds here. My guests and I will navigate the complete spectrum from wildness to responsibility with compassion and curiosity rather than expectation. I'm Ebony Allard and I'm a misfit turned maven, an author, a coach and your host for Adulting with Ebony. Come on then, let's do this. Hey, and welcome to this week's episode. Today I am joined by Betsy Murphy, who is the author of the popular book Autobiography of an Orgasm. The UK Sunday Times calls the book part erotica, part refreshingly sincere for the orgasmically challenged. That's such a great word. Sort of an anti 50 Shades of Grey. Betsy's book has evolved into a solo show called The O Diary, where she takes the audience on a roller coaster of discovery. She's telling her story, but along the way we realise it's part of all of our stories. The show is getting rave reviews as gutsy and life-changing storytelling, and I'm really honoured to have you here, Betsy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry for stumbling over orgasmically. There's so much in that already. I start all these conversations by asking people what it means to be an adult for you, or what adulting means.
Well, it's interesting, as you were reading that review out loud from the UK, from the Sunday Times, when I yeah. It was the first review ever for the book, and I was like, good, you know, looks good. And then it came to the part of being orgasmically challenged. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's, you know, in this major paper being called orgasmically challenged. Of course, that was what the book was about. But when somebody else writes it about you, it was just like shocking. I'm like, oh gosh, I don't want that to be known as orgasmically challenged. So to me, what being an adult means is to tell the truth about your life. To tell the truth about your life, especially as little girls and boys, we grow up being told, you know, don't be a tattletale, don't kiss and tell. Mm. And I even, you know, when I was playing the game Truth or Dare growing up, I would always choose the dare because I was not about to tell the truth about my life because I had too many secrets that I was afraid would label me as not a good girl. So I stayed quiet. So as an adult, can we just all tell the truth? And if somebody is speaking the truth, can we also hold space just to listen?
I love that. It's so important. I think the culture around lying and white lies and what it is to withhold the truth can be really interesting. And often it comes from a place of not wanting to harm or not wanting to hurt. But at least my experience, I think in a way similar to yours, is that actually the truth is the only way to show love.
Yeah. It's interesting, before the book came out, and the book is about, or the first book, Autobiography of an Orgasm, is about my journey to heal my body after, you know, in my 40s, finally remembering, you know, being molested when I was a young girl and being assaulted as a teenager and all these things, because to me they weren't rape, because rape is when somebody attacks you and holds you down, and then 40s. But it was all these times of not speaking up as a way to protect myself and protect others. So before the book came out, I had to go back. I wrote about some of the men in my life, not as a way, it was not about them, but to explain who I was in these relationships and in my two marriages, of why I never, you know, I faked it through orgasms, through, you know, all these relationships. And it wasn't because these men were bad lovers or that I didn't trust them. It was because I didn't think my body had the ability to feel pleasure after so much damage. So before the book came out, I wrote to a couple of them and said, you know, I share some of these stories only, you know, from my perspective. I'm not trying to make anybody look bad. And it was interesting. One of the men said, oh, I give you my blessing to, you know, use my name. And another man threatened to sue me. But what was interesting is you know, you go back to these people and you're, I'm finally telling the truth about my life, but all they're hearing is that I didn't have an orgasm with them. And these are some tough conversations to have, you know, and I was having them in my late 40s, and I get these men were, you know, it was upsetting, but also if we could, once again, listen, because the truth wasn't about them, it was about a damage that not just I experienced, but many women experience, and stay quiet, especially more than half the assaults are before the age of 18. So it's, it was still, you know, a challenging, like the men still can't get past that, you know, oh, by the way, I didn't have an orgasm with you. And it was only because my body didn't feel safe with anybody, but I didn't tell the truth about that.
Now I'm yeah. Good. Yeah. It's so interesting, isn't it? For us to, you know, if we, it's all very well saying that we're going to adult, that we're going to step into telling the truth, but actually it becomes a bigger story when you're looking to create an environment or bring everyone with you. Right. Because I don't know whether you find this as well in your healing work or in your work in the world, but very often when we start working with people and they start telling the truth, the people around them react. And that means that friendships can fall away and things can change. And very often further along the line, after that initial reaction, then there's the opportunity to respond once people have actually processed. And sometimes that can lead to a deeper sense of connection and some great things, right?
Yes, I lead writing retreats around the world, and I know you gather circles of women and men, but especially in circles of women, I'm finding this most recent one, it was a small intensive of three women who were focused on their books, and they all came into it with the book they knew that they were going to write. And then every day through the writing prompts, as they're listening, hearing their story and the other women's stories, everybody's books shifted to a really books of really telling that's the truth of your soul, expressing their deepest truth. And I'm just loving gathering in these circles of women. The other thing that's happening is I've turned my book into a solo show called The O Diary, because I did for 15 minutes once on stage, like a TED style talk, and to be able to communicate with 300 people at once. And I was terrified because I didn't consider myself a public speaker, but to get up on stage and, you know, tell the truth about your body and orgasm, and but also to tell it in a way with humor so people aren't just retreating from it. And even my 85-year-old mother was there, and I said, you know, my mom and I have never had the sex talk, but we're going to have it tonight. But what was interesting is telling it in telling the story on stage where people are going through this journey with you versus just reading it in a book alone. It's been a whole different experience, and it's been really incredible because both men and women come up to me afterwards and thank me, but especially the men are crying through the show and also laughing, and then also understanding that it's not them, that we lived in this culture where we don't talk about sexual assault, emotional abuse, physical violence, because we don't want to hear those stories. We don't talk about them. And so as I tell the story, the men are seeing, you know, they're a product of that culture too. And so I'm not attacking the men in the story. I'm saying this happened to me and this is how I reclaim my, and it wasn't like most like sexy experience ever. It was really uncomfortable and humorous and vulnerable. And I think it, you know, doing it at the age at the time, you know, late 40s, early 50s, when women are being dismissed about our bodies and our value in culture. Like, I'm just discovering my orgasm in my late 40s, and people are saying, oh, it's, you're not of value anymore. And so it's just been, but it's been very sweet to hear the men tell their stories too, because not only have women been silenced, but so have men.
And how has writing in this way and speaking up and turning it into a show, I can see that that's been a healing process for you. Is it also useful for other people? What's your experience of kind of healing trauma through writing and speaking?
Well, I have been, you know, I have a wonderful therapist who's been incredible. I'm a Koya teacher and also take Koya classes. And that's been, you know, movement is healing. We say movement is medicine. And I would absolutely add that writing is medicine. And over again in the workshops I offer with, you know, women come in thinking they're writing one thing. And with the prompts that I give them, it's really pulling out these stories, but telling them not in a way of not being a victim, mm-hmm. but how they, you know, survived, how they became the hero of the moment everything changed, and how they lived beyond it. So for me, it's absolutely been a key to my healing, and I'm witnessing it over and over and over again. I mean, people come on the writing workshops and retreats to write, and everybody leaves saying, "I didn't realize this was going to be so healing." And I didn't either. I mean, it's happened that way. So it makes me, I feel very privileged to be a part of these circles.
My experience with writing Misfit to Maven was very similar. You know, I really didn't want it to be about me. I didn't want it to be a blaming story. You know, it was definitely my version of events, and I wanted other people to relate to it, and I wanted them to connect. But it was almost like two separate things happened. You know, like the first edit was very, very cathartic, and something changed. There's something that happens, something alchemizes as we speak the words out loud, as we get them outside of us onto paper, or particularly poignant if we read them out loud. There's something that shifts.
Absolutely. And this is where now I've moved with my writing, and for myself going into spoken word and doing the solo show, is I'm also during the writing retreats, you know, asking women to not just write their stories, but they have to read them out loud. And as women, we don't realize how blocked, especially if we experience any sort of damage in our pelvic area, it connects to our throat chakra as well. So I will have women, you know, start reading their stories, and I know because I was this woman too, and you know, cover their mouths because they're not used to expressing themselves, not being able to talk, but they do it over and over and over again, and everything begins to shift. Not just that, but I'm noticing too the sourcing the power of the pelvic area when you speak. I'm seeing, I want to say this in the best possible way, many women who might have more of a little girl's voice and they're a grown woman, how some of these stories, when they come out, their voice changes and their voice becomes more powerful. And we, of course, want to tend to that little girl, but I'm also asking women to call in their elder these days. Mm-hmm. We've spent so much time healing that little girl, but what about the wisdom of our elder, our own elder, the 80-year-old me, the 90-year-old me? What does she have to say? And when I bring her in, that's, and other women bring her in, that's where the voice gets really strong, really wise, and also a lot of fun and a little bit naughty.
I couldn't agree more. I think that's, you know, playing with the power in our pelvis, you know, and that connection between the pelvic area and then also our throats is huge. You know, I've been exploring the relationship between the thyroid and the pelvis, and that's just been fascinating to discover and to kind of really look at. We're very complex.
Absolutely. And so many women have thyroid issues, and we only treat the surface of the issue when the roots of it. Probably, I would guarantee most of them have probably experienced some sort of disconnection or assault against their body at one point. And once we start taking into the root causes of all this, everything can start shifting.
Mm-hmm. And if someone's in a place of remembering trauma or wanting to dive a little deeper into their memories and into what's going on, but feeling, you know, scared, I suppose, of what might happen or how other people, you know, all of the things that we think, like how are other people going to respond, all of that, just by us thinking about it. Do you have any advice of how to start reconnecting?
Well, for me, I would say just telling one person that you know will listen. And it's also during, you know, I do this in my writing retreats and in Koya circles, if somebody starts to cry while they tell their story, we all, because we're women, want to reach over and stop them and hug them and put a hand. And I actually ask people not to. I tell them ahead of time, if you start crying, I am going to just sit here and really open, you know, my heart and soul to you. But it's up to the minute you start touching someone that they want to stop crying right then. So one thing you can do is find somebody who will really listen, whether it's a therapist or a good friend. I had never even told my best friends, so they really weren't the right people to go to. And then the other thing is, you know, deciding if you want to, you know, do a ritual around it, release it. You know, I was just really lucky because once I started to even do this work, I wasn't looking for the pieces of me that were lost. But once I started to do this work, I guarantee anybody else that's starting to remember will be led in the right direction. So it's just really trusting your body and listening to your body, because there's no, you know, these are the first three steps you do once you remember. It's really like going, oh, this is coming up, and really listening and listening and to your body telling the truth.
I love that. And for anyone who hasn't read your book, all three of them are fantastic. There are three, right?
There's two books, Autobiography of an Orgasm and Beyond O. And then I have three anthologies of reader stories.
Right.
So every year or so I have reader submit stories of just telling the truth about their sensual paths. And what's interesting is these came out before, you know, the Me Too movements and were like quietly passed around. And so I had women getting up on stage sharing their stories, and now I see so many women doing it, so it makes me feel like I wasn't completely crazy, which a lot of people thought when I was starting this. And that was just trusting myself.
Yeah, well, you really, really weren't. And that, and Autobiography of an Orgasm is an incredibly powerful book, healing book. But more than that, as well as that, I was going to say, it's also incredibly well told, and it's very, very easy to read and very funny. And I think that starting with connecting in with other women, you know, and other people's stories as well, can help to make you feel less alone. And just reading other people's stories can often start that healing journey for us, right?
Yeah, thank you. I have to believe that the women that are remembering now, we are on the transition team of like being the last ones, because we're speaking up so that my daughter and my granddaughters won't have to, because it's not, you know, it's going to stop. So just know, if you have these memories, it's, you know, being called in at the highest spiritual level to speak up and transform. And I would have never imagined I would be leading retreats, writing retreats around the world, and getting up on stage speaking. So you just don't know what's going to happen once you start remembering, and then instead of feeling victimized, actually say, wait, this happened to me and it mattered. My voice matters, my life matters, and I'm going to tell the truth about my life.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And if people want to come and connect with you, find out more about the books, or find out more about your retreats or workshops or Koya, where's the best place for them to go?
My website is betsybmurphy.com.
Fantastic. I'll make sure that their link is in the show notes, so it's very easy for people to click through. And do you have a little adulting confession? So I'm an adult, but for us.
Yeah, I would say this really comes out of this past year. I have two new granddaughters in my life, and I'm an adult, but I am going through the world with a sense of curiosity and wonder, and especially at the age of 55, like moving into a matriarch of just like how can I have as much fun as possible and just be curious about things versus trying to figure them out? Just be curious.
I love that. I love that. I have a niece who I feel very similarly about at the moment. And my, I think I can say this. So I'm an adult, but nothing brings me more joy than buying presents for my goddaughter at the moment. She's in a pink phase. And I'm going to say this because she won't listen to it, but also because I would have given them to her by then. Just bought her pink, shiny unicorn trainers, and nothing made me happier.
She's lucky to have you.
It's just really fun being able to buy stuff like that.
I blow a lot of bubbles these days and it brings me such joy.
Oh, yes. Oh, Betsy, thank you so much for coming and talking with me and having this really important conversation.
Thank you.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you so much for all of your support. Please keep listening, liking, rating, sharing so that more people can come and enjoy and engage with us. Really, thank you. I'll see you next time.